Mission Hospital is leading the way in providing you with the most advanced diagnostic care in the world, part of the St. Joseph Health System. And now it's time for Mission Radio. Here's Melanie Cole.
Well, it's Diabetes Awareness Month, and it's a very complicated disease and sometimes difficult to manage. My guest is Dr. Joseph Barrera. He's board-certified endocrinologist at Mission Hospital. Welcome to the show, Dr. Barrera. Let's talk about managing diabetes, and first of all, type 1. This is an insulin-dependent type of diabetes, something you have to really care for your entire life once you find out that you have it. First, it's your parents caring for you, and then it's you. Explain a little bit about management with type 1.
So with type 1 diabetes, the treatment is insulin, and it's a little cleaner in the sense that we know exactly what we need to treat the condition. So with our type 1 patients, what we suggest is using the most sophisticated insulin delivery systems available, those being insulin pumps, and for those people who might be doing injections rather than pumps, using multiple daily injections of insulin, mealtime insulin, as well as long-acting insulin to get the most comprehensive and stable blood glucose control that we can get.
Now, do you advise people check their blood sugar very often and regularly?
Well, most of them need to from the standpoint of being able to self-regulate their insulin. So the beauty of type 1 diabetes is that individuals can see their blood sugar on a regular basis through glucose monitoring and can then make individual decisions at each moment in time at meals and depending on exercise to change their insulin therapy based on their blood sugars. One of the things that we've been encouraging people to look into is the use of continuous glucose monitors. These are things that that patients wear, they're prescribed by their physicians, and insurance companies are increasingly more receptive to the use of them, and they allow for blood sugar tests every 5 minutes through that monitor with a digital readout of their blood sugar every 5 minutes, so it doesn't completely replace the need for patients to monitor themselves with a finger stick blood sugar. But it goes a long way for them to see kind of real-time blood sugar measurements throughout the day.
Dr. Barrera, you mentioned exercise, and exercise has an insulin-like effect. And as a result, a person that is a type 1 diabetic that exercises can throw their levels off, but in a good way, maybe reducing the need for certain amount of medication. However, they really have to keep a very close track and keep a good monitor, be actually a type A personality to really keep that close of a track. What do you advise where exercise is concerned?
Yeah, I think you're right. The more a person's personality is that of a type A individual, the better they tend to be with their glucose management. They get very regimented and careful and sophisticated with the way they measure their sugars and use insulin, including with exercise. As you said, that typically their insulin requirements would be less when they exercise. So as patients learn how exercise affects their blood sugar, they typically make the appropriate adjustment in both their diet and in their insulin to reduce the likelihood of a low blood sugar because with diabetes, unfortunately, it's a double-edged sword. We certainly don't want blood sugars to run excessively high so that they can avoid complications of diabetes, but low blood sugars are a hazard as well, and so we have to really walk this fine line, making the condition a challenging one for patients to manage.
Now, food. For both types of diabetes, food is so important. It provides the blood sugar that we use in our cells for our working muscles, brain, and spinal cord. It also can be disastrous in some respects. How do you monitor the food for either type of diabetic, and what foods do you really like them to stay away from?
I think the simplest approach is to encourage patients to be careful with the consumption of simple sugars. One of the things we'll often tell patients is to not drink their calories, so beverages that are high in sugar should typically be avoided. And in our office, we have the advantage of using nutritionists and dietitians that our patients will see on a regular basis, particularly at their initial diagnosis, to help get their diet dialed in and to use insulin to match their diet more individually.
Okay, so they really have to watch those simple sugars that they intake. Now, type 2 diabetes, it's so prevalent. We're seeing it in 9-year-olds when you might have thought it was juvenile, but it's really type 2. It used to be called adult onset. It's not called that anymore. And so as a result, as you stated earlier, sedentary lifestyle, too many video games, computer games, junk food, high sugar, fat foods, weight gain. Speak about that sedentary lifestyle, and can we actually prevent type 2 diabetes?
One of the recent publications by the American Diabetes Association was to emphasize the need to screen individuals more aggressively for pre-diabetes or early indications that they might be susceptible. So we are starting to be more careful looking for patients who might be at risk based on a family history or their body weight, and trying to encourage those patients to begin to examine what they might be doing in their lives that would be contributing to their risk. And there we have started to also encourage patients to see a nutritionist to help develop lifestyle changes that would allow them to lose enough weight. Typically 7% of their body weight would be sufficient to lower their risk. And that too would involve reducing their simple sugar intake and eating less even complex carbohydrates, trying to be more protein focused with their diet. Their patients are often surprised at how small changes, even as little as a 7% change in their body weight, can reduce their diabetes risk significantly.
And Dr. Barrera, where does alcohol fit into that picture? Because it's a different kind of sugar, responds differently in your body, however.
Right, so alcohol is a potential, it is a source of calories, and we recommend no more than 1 to 2 alcoholic beverages per day. It is something that is okay for diabetics to consume, but the quantity needs to be carefully monitored, not just from the standpoint of how it affects caloric intake, but it can have a significant effect on blood sugar. Alcohol is relatively complicated in that in some cases, depending on the time of day and when it's consumed, it can cause an increase in blood sugar. But also at times, if you consume alcohol without sufficient food intake with it, it can actually cause a drop in the blood sugar. So we always try to ask patients what their alcohol consumption is, try to ensure that they're not drinking excessively, and then teach patients how it can affect blood sugar in either direction, and ask them to do more careful monitoring around the time that they might be drinking.
That's good advice, and you want to make sure to do careful monitoring really about all of your things. So you want to know your numbers, correct?
That's right, and I think for patients with diabetes or who might be at risk, the hemoglobin A1C is a wonderful test. So it's, as you know, a 3-month average of a patient's blood sugar for the preceding 90 days comes back in a single measurement. And our goal is to try to achieve for patients with diabetes a hemoglobin A1C of less than 7%. But it's also useful as a screening test for patients who might be at risk. So individuals who might be concerned that they're at risk for diabetes can ask their physician for a hemoglobin A1C test. In a non-diabetic who's being screened for the condition, a hemoglobin A1C of over 6.5% would be diagnostic of diabetes. It's become easier to screen and look for diabetes in patients as a result of this test. We've kind of used that to take the place of the old glucose tolerance test, which was a unpleasant and kind of cumbersome test.
Yes, and not always as reliable as it might be. Now, in the last minute and a half, please, Dr. Barrera, this is such a great topic and such an important one. Wrap up for us diabetes for this awareness month, your very best advice for type 1 and type 2, those things that they do have in common, your best advice for what people can do to manage their diabetes.
Well, I see diabetes as probably the number one self-management disease and the number one epidemic of a chronic disease in our country. It's self-management because patients can do glucose monitoring and see the results on a moment-to-moment basis. And so they have the knowledge with these blood sugars of what their diabetes is doing and hopefully can take proper steps to manage their blood sugar. It's also complicated from the standpoint of your needing to not just manage blood sugars, but blood pressure and cholesterol levels as well. So patients with diabetes, be sure to see their physician on a regular basis and ask about their hemoglobin A1C, their cholesterol levels and blood pressure levels. Ask their physician if they're meeting the proper recommended targets for each of those parameters so they can minimize the long-term risk of consequences from having diabetes.
And remember, keep track of your numbers. Know what your numbers are. Ask your physician about the hemoglobin A1C test. Also, exercise. It has an insulin-like effect. It can affect you in such a positive way, and it's such like a medicine. Remember that exercise, eating right, watching your simple sugars, your alcohol intake can all be wonderful ways to manage your diabetes. You're listening to Mission Radio. For more information, go to missionforhealth.com. That's mission, the number 4, health.com. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks for listening.